Okay, I'd like to introduce Dr. Amy Bursnick Nowak. She is an associate professor of the Public Health Education and Promotion at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. Her scholarly interests include CAM use, health behavior, holistic health coaching, and technology in public health education. She is currently collaborating with Columbia University to assess CAM use among their students to support incorporation of CAM therapies into their health services. She promotes holistic health care and health education approaches in university and community setting areas. Welcome, Dr. Amy, to present for us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the conference. Today, I'm here with, you can see up here, we have lots of people working together on this project, and I'm here with Dr. O'Keefe. You want to come up and tell us? He's going to tell us a little bit about the team of people, and start with yourself, maybe.
Okay. Hi, my name is Rick O'Keefe. I'm a family physician who serves the students at Columbia University, the Morningside campus. This presentation really represents the work of the Integrative Medicine Group, which Joe DeGeist, Amanda Dowdry, and Samuel Seward, and a few other people are a part of. And Amy is our next collaborator, which is helping us really kind of move to the next step. And I'm a primary care clinician there. Amy is assistant director of the ALICE group, which is the health promotion group. And Joe DeGeist is the associate director of clinical systems and environmental safety, and also by chance was a hypnotherapist. And I just share that with you because it's a multidisciplinary group representing different arms within Columbia, which I think has been part of our success. And then by partnering with Amy, we've really moved to the next level.
All right, so our goal today, number one, we're going to talk about the prevalence of CAM use in a specific college population. And then we're going to explain how the demographics and social cognitive constructs relate to CAM use, and then talk about some implications for what that means on a college campus. So if you're in this session, I'm assuming you have some interest in CAM and have some kind of background and understand that CAM, when we use complementary and alternative medicine or integrative medicine, whatever terms you're using, it's really about a vast array of different therapies that come from a long history of development. And they're complementary and alternative to our conventional care practices. Now, if you get into the literature and look at why people choose CAM, you get into things like internal locus of control. They prefer natural therapies. They believe CAM therapies to be efficient. They like having them accessible. They like that there are less harmful side effects in comparison to some of the treatments you'll find in conventional care, and the idea that it promotes health instead of focuses on illness. On the other side, and these are highlighted because these are the ones that are influencing our particular study. So the idea of postmodern values and a holistic attitude, we have a scale that measures that. We have a second scale that gets into social network use, looking at family, friends, colleagues, etc. The idea is, if I know people that are using it, am I more likely to use it myself? And then the third area, we get into the CAM encounter, and by that we're talking about the healthcare encounter. So when you go in to see a physician or another type of care provider, what is my interaction there? What do I expect to happen, and how much do I value those outcomes? And so those we've developed into three separate scales. So in America, you will find, based on published research, that CAM use is most prevalent among white, middle-aged, affluent, educated people in urban areas, especially in the West and Midwest, and especially people that have chronic health conditions. And in a lot of studies, females are significantly more likely to be CAM users than their male counterparts. So according to NHIS data, 38% of U.S. adults have used at least one form of CAM therapy in the past year. And this is important because people are spending literally $34 billion a year out of pocket for therapies that are generally not covered by insurance. So there's a call for it, to understand it, to incorporate it, et cetera. Now, college CAM use is very interesting because there are a limited number of studies. There's only 10 published studies that look at rates of use, and they're kind of sporadic around the country. The reason that I'm interested in it is because, number one, I work primarily with college students, and two, I started using CAM therapies as a college student, and I said, okay, am I the only wackadoodle one that's using this stuff? What's happening? You know, is it safe? Are other people using it? If so, why? I want to understand this behavior. So that was what influenced my first study, which was published back in 2008. And so since then, what I've done is collected the data on these 10 published studies. I'm not talking about, like, efficacy of therapies or anything like that. I'm just talking about what therapies are people using, and are there any social cognitive reasons that they're using it. So I collected all that information, combined it all together, and then compared it to national data from the NHIS study. And what you'll find is that for the seven therapies I was able to compare, there are six therapies that college students use at significantly higher rates than the general U.S. adult population. And so the connection there is that education is always a significant predictor of CAM use. So the more education you have, the more likely you are to be a CAM user. So, and you can see the list here, the acupuncture, homeopathy, the NVNM, which represents your herbals, and your massage therapy, your healing therapy, your Reiki, and your yoga. Those are the ones that we know for sure that they are using more. Now, the problem in the college CAM studies is that some studies collected data on only like 10 CAM therapies, and some collected data on like 33 CAM therapies. So if your definition of CAM is 10 therapies versus 33 CAM therapies, guess what happens when you say, oh, 64% use it or 85% use it? So we had to kind of look at therapies individually versus kind of collapsing them all down into one variable. Now, Rick is going to talk a little bit about Columbia University and what's going on there and kind of what inspired the study specifically for their campuses.
For those of you who may or may not know, Columbia is like a city in a city. It's huge. It has two campuses, the Morningside campus and the Medical Center campus, which are separated by about 2 miles. The Morningside campus has approximately 25,000 students, so it's like a small town. And I work in that student health center, so we're basically the caregivers for that small town of students. Many of the students use CAM therapies, many of them ask about it. The service provider, as if it's Cumberland Health, it's Student Health Service, there's six pieces to that. I won't go into all that. In 2004, I was asked by the medical director, who's the assistant vice president of student services, to look at integrative medicine. So a multidisciplinary group, some of the members who I've mentioned, began to kind of think how we could assist students and guide clinicians. Interestingly, he not only asked me to do this, but he simultaneously was very skeptical that there was any reason to do this. And we spent the first really 6 or 7 years hearing a lot of no to everything that we would suggest, or this isn't the right time, or we don't have enough space. But he's also a very data guy, and he loves data. So we knew that we needed to rethink our approach, and thus we began to reach out to Amy. And so our next initiative was to develop a study so that we would be speaking through the students' voices, not through our voices. And it's a very high value at Columbia that the students' voices are heard. So that was the approach that we took. Simultaneously, we had a new director of health services who was a personal friend of mine and also a high user of CAM therapies as well as allopathic modalities. So we had another opening for change to occur. And for her, it was very important to integrate what's called the medical home model, which you may have heard of that or not heard of it. But it basically, it's a team-based healthcare delivery model that provides comprehensive and continuous medical care to patients. But the value there is that your patients stay with you or at home as much as possible. And a lot of our students were seeking CAM modalities off campus with unknown providers. We had limited coverage with our health insurance program. And we couldn't even regulate it. You know, example is I have one patient who was recently just hospitalized because he took a Chinese herb that he was prescribed that has an arrhythmic effect, and no one told him, and he had an arrhythmia. So finding a way to keep him with us, asking us those questions where we could meet his needs as well as keep him safe. Thus, this partnership.
So the purpose of the study at Columbia was really to kind of explore those questions are, you know, what therapies are they using, at what rate, and why are they using it? And what's unique here, we've got a large graduate population, which has been even less studied than undergraduate population in CAM use, and they also have a fairly large section of pre-professional healthcare students. So it's based on social cognitive theory, the constructs that we pulled, the outcome expectancies and the observational learning constructs inform the development of our scales that I had developed in 2008. And then we also used a scale for attitude that was developed by an Australian researcher. And so we wanted to look at how these things kind of combine together with demographics to predict CAM use. So our sample, there are about 28,000 students during the fall 2012 semester. They were sent email with a link to an online survey, and they answered their questions there. The SurveyMonkey was what we used. We had six sections, including CAM use in the past 12 months, where we had a list of all the different CAM therapies, and then we had our attitude scale, our social network use scale, our outcome expectancy scale, and then several demographics questions. And we came up with an overall response rate of 39% with a completed number of surveys totaling 2,553. So kind of a quick overview of the results based on the number of therapies. I think we had 33 total. Almost 82% of students reported use of at least one of those therapies during the past 12 months. And this allows us to compare to previous studies, again, to see, you know, are they having similar results as far as specific CAM therapies. Now, the most commonly used therapies, kind of in a common sense, it makes sense that they're ones that tend to not have a practitioner. So your non-vitamin, non-mineral, or herbal supplements, yoga, your deep breathing exercises, meditation, Pilates, diet-based things. The most common practitioner-based therapies are massage therapy, chiropractic, and acupuncture. And then you get into some of the like not as well-known therapies, iridology and Ayurveda, and some of those more kind of involved therapies, and those are the ones that are reported as being less used. Under our demographics, we had several, when we just run some linear regressions, it shows that age, gender, campus location, citizenship, living situation, et cetera, most of these were significant predictors in a simple linear regression. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, your relationship or marital status does not influence your likelihood of using CAM, at least among this population. In our social cognitive predictors, they were all found to be significant predictors of use. And so what that means is if you have a more positive attitude toward CAM or holistic practices, you're more likely to use it. If your family members, grandparents, parents, et cetera, siblings, use it, you're more likely to use it. Even your non-family members, colleagues, friends, et cetera, you're more likely to use it if they do. And then outcome expectancies related to the encounter, your interaction with the healthcare provider, and your personal outcome expectancies, which are things like time and money, it was worth it kind of thing, those are also important.
Okay. So we did this study, and so we basically, as you can see, everybody's using CAM therapies. So we had to find a way to yes. So what we decided to do was try to look at a modality that there was also good scientific evidence for, which was acupuncture. There's tons of evidence around that. And as I said earlier, the assistant vice president is an evidence guy. So basically, we made a presentation to him, and I can't tell you how many other people went all the way up the hierarchical chain of Columbia University for this presentation because of the level of fear and anxiety that people have about adding a new or a CAM modality. But this is the data that we kept selling to them, that we had a 39% response rate on the survey, which is very, very good. We had, this is the largest study in the nation looking at a university population. In those responders, 8% of them were using acupuncture in the last 12 months. The national data shows that 1% of the population uses acupuncture, so we were way above. And when I calculated, as I said, the 25,000 students, which was for the Morningside campus, the 28,000 students is for the Morningside and the Medical Center campus, that would mean that we would have 2,000 unique visits for acupuncture every year. And that sold them, that it was a reasonable thing to begin. Can I go on?
Yep.
And so what we did in this past year is we partnered with the Pacific College of Oriental Medicine, which is the largest Chinese medical college in the nation. They have three sites, one in New York, one in Chicago, and one in San Diego. And part of their training is that their senior students do a off service, so they provide free acupuncture to our students one morning a week because they get the clinical experience and our students get the service for free. That also was a big selling point. And that right so far, we're booked through December. All of the evaluations have been very positive, and there's much more demand. And now the assistant director, who was the skeptic, is the one presenting this to the Ivy League group as a potential model. And that's really, again, thanks to Amy. We're considering adding our next modality that we want to add is mindfulness-based stress reduction because there's also a lot of good data on that. And then we've been able to argue that this enhances the medical home model because instead of those students going outside of the university, they're inside, they're in the university, and it's enhancing the conversations with their primary care practitioners around how they view and deal with health.
And outside just the, you know, offering a service on campus, not that it's a kind of a just a thing, but in addition to that, I want to say as a health educator on a college campus, there are some other things that we want to think about as far as educating our students in our classrooms, but also at health fairs and student group opportunities, et cetera, so that they understand both the risks of, you know, CAM therapies, there are some, but there are also lots of benefits that other people may not be receiving from a healthcare practice that they hadn't considered before. So having them being open-minded to trying these things to get the care that actually will help them is really important. So we want to be aware of it. We want to suggest that I would love to see it collected nationally, like with the American College Health data set or some other national survey that we can really target this population, understand it more. Do you want to do questions now or at the end? Or
one question now?
We have one question now and some at the end, I guess. Does anybody have any? Does anybody have a question? Okay. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Do you have any input?
The health promotion group offers neck and back massages for stress, but we're doing this more for pain stuff, and then we may move to stress. We're worried about the demand.
Absolutely.
The University of Vermont has a really well-developed mindfulness-based stress reduction program, which they use for stress.
Yeah, that's the one that UNLV uses.
Yeah. And they've done studies, and they've shown that it reduces test anxiety, it reduces medication use for ADHD, and improves sleep.
And if anybody, if we run out of time here, you can always email me or Joe DeGuise at Columbia if you have more questions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.